Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Tristan and I have the SeatGeek app on our phones, and it's by far the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, instantly find seats, and we actually just did that 2 weeks ago, and it worked out great at a minor league game because we know where to go. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I wrote about that. You probably missed it, but yes.
What, you write?
Oh, man.
I write. I left. Yeah, once in a while I do.
We are all troublemakers.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
All right, welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball for Thursday, April 19th, 2018. I am Eric. He is Tristan. And we welcome, as always, researcher Kyle Soppy, editorial watchdog Leo Howe, and producer Anthony Colatiu. Tristan, lots to discuss on today's show. Injuries, signings, combo meals, some great pitching. Pretty cool, wouldn't you say?
Pretty cool, but can we put the injuries aside? Can we just do away with injuries? Oh.
Well, we're always going to complain about something. It's going to be weather. It's going to be injuries. It's going to be old people pushing out baseball. Young people, you know, whatever.
But baseball needs a checkbox in the thing where we could check off disable injuries. That would be great.
That would be great. All right, let's get to the buzz. We're going to start with a look at the player rater and some of the players that are doing pretty nicely, whether they can keep this up. Gerrit Cole of Houston, I think we have to start there. It's pretty impressive. I mean, Gerrit Cole and Patrick Corbin are the two starting pitchers in the overall top 10 right now that, man, I mean, Ohtani's a different situation. We'll get to him a little bit later. But what Cole and Corbin are doing seems just as likely to continue as what Ohtani can do on the mound when he's healthy, of course. I mean, Cole, according to this, only pitcher to have completed at least seven innings in all four of his starts this season. He has four straight starts of seven innings and no more than five hits allowed. The strikeouts, he didn't have double digits on Wednesday, but still, he faced a team that doesn't strike out a lot in Seattle. It's pretty amazing what Gerrit Cole is doing, and I reevaluated him in my rankings and moved him well. He was like my number 15 starting pitcher. I moved Patrick Corbin way up, too. His last outing went the distance, one hit against the Giants, eight strikeouts. Second time this month, he has completed at least seven innings while allowing just one hit and striking out at least eight. No pitcher did that last season more than once. Patrick Corbin, Gerrit Cole, pick one.
If I must pick one, I'll pick Gerrit Cole because I like the raw talent better. But I don't have a problem with either of these two. And as much as it sounds like us just reacting to hot starts, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about both pitchers. And the reason for that is they've shown very distinct changes in their pitch selection. Gerrit Cole is, as I was anticipating, throwing his breaking pitches, curve and slider, 11% more often this year than last. That is a very welcome sign because I've always felt that those pitches were very good. And if you've seen the curveball in any of these games, it looks like it's performing very nicely. Sixth best performing pitch among the ERA qualifiers so far. In Patrick Corbin's case, going a little bit more towards his sinker and his slider, which is something he did during that big, I believe it was 2013. So I like seeing that. Except in this case, he's balancing between the two pitches. These guys are different types today than they were 1 year ago. Got to be optimistic.
Right. And, you know, we shouldn't be that surprised when a pitcher that has done it before, to a degree, does it to this level. I mean, Robbie Ray was a good example of this a couple of years ago. And you saw all the strikeouts and you thought, man, if he could just get some better command, stop walking people, stop, be a little bit better with run prevention. We could see that coming. I mean, Cole had a year like this in 2015. His final ERA was 260. Corbin struck out 178 guys last year. I mean, you could see, I mean, Rick Porcello 2 years ago won the Cy Young. You can see a path for guys when they have success returning to even greater success. That's why I think all these, and I'm including Porcello now, these are all legitimate. Like, people would say, like, sell high on these players because obviously they're not going to finish with an ERA of 090-something, but I'm not really selling high. I feel like if the rest of the year they have an ERA of 280, that's okay.
And that's the thing, is sell high is, to me, the lazy reaction to this, and that is something that any of us as fantasy managers are susceptible to, because the thing we say to pitchers who start this well is, quote, regression is inevitable. Well, of course it is. Players don't keep up seasonal paces at this level. But the thing we got to do for the takeaway here is, how much does it regress? I don't think it regresses enough that they're even worth putting out there on the market. Obviously, any player should be available in a trade, but I'm with you, Eric. I don't think that any of these three is somebody that I would sell away. Corbin, in Corbin's case, he's actually pitched extremely well with the underlying skills for several years now. In the past three, I remember the metrics were very good, with the exception of K's this year. And maybe that's Robbie Ray comparing his 2016 to 2017. Maybe it's Corbin 2017 versus 2018.
Some other pitchers here I want to get on the show before we move to the hitters. Masahiro Tanaka seemed like an easy pick in DFS against the Marlins the other day, and then he got lit up. You watch a lot of Tanaka as a Yankee fan, more than I do, more than anyone on the show does, and man, he's just so inconsistent. You know, whether it's a home versus road, or whether it's day versus night, or whether it's good team versus bad, I just don't know what he's going to do from outing to outing. That makes it awfully tough for me to make him a top 20 starting pitcher. What do you say?
Yeah, and I understand that, especially based on what we saw last season. This kind of is going to remind everybody of that first half that was poor. And it's exactly the same thing from what I've seen, and that is that his command of the splitter is just not as effective as it was in the second half of last season. I think that is something that can be corrected, so I don't want to panic necessarily just based on this. I mean, the Boston matchup, that was another bad one before this. That was the one that I give him the free pass because that's a very tough matchup, especially on the road. But this Marlins one, you don't want to see this kind of command. In his defense, the Yankees have played an extremely large number of games in very poor weather conditions, and I wonder whether that's contributing. I actually think Tanaka is somebody who you give a little bit of a free pass.
Speaking of the splitter and a free pass, Shohei Ohtani, did you learn anything from Tuesday? Anybody who read my article knows what I think. What do you think?
I think that the fact that it was reported as a blister afterwards is a concern, because we know about the issues with that specific injury last season. Beyond that, I didn't learn an awful lot other than the Red Sox are going to be a very difficult matchup for any pitcher this season. So I think based on the fact that this ended with an injury, I'm more willing to cast it aside. But it should keep us in check. It's going to keep us from saying that Shohei Ohtani is a top five fantasy starting pitcher.
What Boston did is they like reacted to him. They laid off the splitter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Oakland didn't do that at all. They were swinging wildly at everything, not to take anything away from Oakland. But if teams have a game plan for Ohtani and lay off the splitter, he might get more called strikeouts, but, you know, he might also throw half his pitches for balls. Now the ball's in his court, even if he pitches next week, which I still think he will not. I don't know. How can you not take this seriously if you're the Angels? Like, how can you let him bat today or tomorrow? This is what I was worried about with his plate work, is that, you know, he would have an injury. And look, we can't just say blisters are nothing. I mean, it cost Aaron Sanchez all last season. It has Rich Hill again on the disabled list for the millionth time.
Well, they're not saying it's a blister, though.
What do you think of it?
I know, I'm with you. It is a hand slash finger related injury regarding pitching. And I Aaron Sanchez three times went on for, quote, blisters. The fourth time it was for, quote, a fingernail problem. So I'm with you. This is a problem.
All right. Any other thoughts here on pitchers over the last couple of days? Johnny Cueto pitched really well the other day. You know, nobody seems to be buying into him. He didn't win the game. That was against Corbin. But Johnny Cueto looks good. Do you view pitchers like Cueto, who are obviously not as good as they once were, but are pitching for really bad teams? And the Giants are dead last in the league in scoring runs. It doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. Like, I wrote today a little bit about Matt Boyd, but he's on a terrible team. What do you do with pitchers on terrible teams?
I feel that you have to exploit the matchups more than anything. I mean, that cast the light on them in that you're going to need to pick the times where you think you have a decent probability of quality start slash win. In the leagues where wins don't matter, it's a lot easier to navigate pitchers like this. You just want to take talent. The other thing, too, is it's more than just the offense. It's the bullpen behind them. I don't like that Detroit bullpen behind Boyd, so it makes it even more difficult to pick him because you need to hope he pitches deep into games. In Cueto's case, though, he does have that good ballpark facing him, so I really think the only issue with Cueto is just the wins.
Briefly with hitters, Mookie Betts moved into the top spot on the player radar. Now it's Bryce Harper, but both are amazing. Both are top 10 guys. I don't think anything's changed here. You know me. I look at last year's numbers and I say, all right, that's great, but 2 years ago means just as much. That's why I thought Betts could have an amazing season. That Boston lineup, man, it is really rocking right now. You could see Betts scoring like 130 runs, can't you? I can.
Yeah, I mean, now, to get there, you need everything to click, but so far, so good with that, and in Mookie Betts' case, the big correction from a year ago, the BABIP. He was extremely lucky in that last year, extremely unlucky, 268 last year, 367 so far, and I've looked at the line drive metrics on that, the quality of his contact last season, he was like 40 points beneath where he should have been.
The number three hitter on the player radar is Jed Lowry. He's the most added player in ESPN leagues, I'm going to write about him. What do you think he ends up at? He's had 6 homers and 21 RBI already, which is crazy. And, you know, that's why I wasn't saying, like, on the Ohtani stuff that Oakland's a bad lineup. It really isn't that bad of a lineup. They've got plenty of power. They had plenty of power last year. But Lowry, he has not hit more than 16 home runs in any season in his career. He has 6 right now. He's a career 263 hitter hitting 346.
Mm-hmm. I was a huge fan in that 2012 year that you're referencing. I am a terrible person. I'm going to say he finishes with 17 homers and maybe 70, 71 RBI.
I don't think that makes you a terrible person. I can think of other reasons. Well, I'm just saying. What was I going to say?
Ouch.
There? Let's talk about somebody else. Oh, let's hear some music. It's Combo Meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal.
So we did a show on Monday, and I said mean things about Trevor's story. So obviously he was listening, and that night he had a combo meal.
Of course.
Because that's what happens, right?
Yep.
But did that change anything for you?
No. It accentuated just what he is, and that is going to be an extremely streaky player. By nature, the three true outcome guys are going to do things like this.
All right, what about Yoan Moncada, who is striking out 42% of the time, but he has combo meals each of the past 2 days? Now, I've been a big supporter of Moncada's, and I don't find too many people in the industry that agree with me on this, but it's for the reason that we've seen the last couple of days. He can do great things. He has power. He has speed. He bats first in the lineup, but then next week he might go 0 for 15 with 8 strikeouts. Have you changed your opinion on Moncada this week?
No. What this has actually done is rescued the somewhat favorable opinion I had of him coming into said week. We just, as a matter of fact, our question of the day, we discussed struggling White Sox hitters who people have been cutting in ESPN leagues recently, and one of the things I've pointed out is that they've had a really tough weather schedule, even worse than the Yankees. They had 3 postponements, they're playing in cold weather, and Moncada's quality of contact, despite the 39% strikeout rate, has been exceptional. He's so far, his hard hit rate is greater than 50%. So he's making hard contact more than half the time he puts the ball in play. It's not often, I get that, but you got to love what you see what he's doing with these metrics, and the fact that he did this past 2 games is a big plus.
I keep telling people, but nobody's going to listen, especially on Twitter, don't look at batting average after 2 weeks. People are trying to cut like Carlos Santana, who you know what he is. I mean, he's not going to change, and his hard hit rate is like 3rd in baseball last I looked. Mm-hmm. Carlos Santana's going to be fine. Okay, he's batting 2nd in an improved lineup. He's going to play every day. He's going to hit 20-plus home runs. He's going to bat 260. Nothing special, but he's pretty safe. Don't look at batting average.
And the same
goes on the high side. Like Ryan Flaherty. I mean, give me a break with this Ryan Flaherty stuff, people. You want to drop Carlos Santana and pick up Ryan Flaherty, go ahead. I'll pick up Santana.
Your go-to categories at this time of year.
It's not batting average. I look at walk rate, K rate. I mean, obviously, Moncada's K rate scares me. I look a little bit at BABIP because I want to see what's going on there. Some cases, a guy has a high batting average and it ain't BABIP. You know, that tells me something. Not everything, but something. I mean, you're talking about hitters here. I look at Wobo. I want to see if a guy is struggling against lefties or righties. I mean, what's your answer there?
For stats that people can access, and these are primarily on FanGraphs. I'm looking at things like the swinging strike rate of the hitter, not K rate. I'm looking at the O swing, which is what I call the chase rate. That's with our own pitch tracking tool. That is a critical one. That's a little bit better a read than walks is. And as you said, Eric, the hard contact rate. The hard contact rate, as well as the batted ball distributions, are very important. And those are in comparison to the player's past history.
Right. Exit velocity is important. I look at that a little bit. And Michael Franco is not chasing everything on the outside portion of the plate. I look at that too. I always giving you like the simple stats, but you're right. FanGraphs is a great place to look for the other things and the swinging strikes. I mean, if you're swinging at balls, you're gonna have problems anyway. What else? Oh, the last guy to have comma meals on consecutive days.
Corey, yeah, that's a great
Spangenberg. I would not have ever guessed that. You could have told me the team, and I don't think I would have gotten it.
Yeah,
in fact, most people don't even know what team he's on.
You get the one before him. He was a bigger name, Trey Turner.
Trey Turner.
I actually looked this up because I wanted to see if anybody had done it three times in a row during the pitch tracking tool data. We have 10 years of this, and I couldn't find one. Nobody's done it 3 days in a row. So it is Moncada, three games in a row.
Maybe he does. Reds replaced their manager today, which proves that they have no idea what they're doing. Does this affect fantasy at all? Obviously, to me, it's just about where Billy Hamilton bats in the order. Nothing else can really change.
Bingo! You hit it right on the head here.
Okay.
The lineups.
Because, I mean, if any – and Jim Ringelmann is an old-school manager who's been a manager before. He's done some strange things. I don't think things are going to get better. I think it's just an interim guy, and, you know, Price must have said the wrong thing. Price was wrong.
I mean, I don't know how you felt about Price in terms of the managerial ability. I've felt that he's very good with – at least when he was a pitching coach, had some quality to bring there. So I wonder whether that's going to be his next gig, is back as a pitching coach. But I wasn't overwhelmed as a manager.
I wasn't either, but at least Jesse Winker was leading off when healthy.
Yeah, he did pretty decent with the lineups, and I don't like that he, in the past five games or so, has gone back to Hamilton at leadoff.
Of course not.
I don't get it.
Because it makes no sense.
I know.
Why would you want a guy with a 280 on base? Just, I don't care if he's as fast as anything. Briefly with injuries, and we'll get to this weekend schedule, Byron Buxton, you had enough?
No. But can
you make a case in an ESPN 10-team standard to keep him around? He's down to 83% owned, and that's going to keep dropping.
I can make the case to keep him, but this is, again, going to be the – you probably have better players considering the rash of – the other one, too, we'll mention in a second, I'm sure, Freddie Freeman. If we have him and we have Byron Buxton, I think we know which one's more important.
Well, obviously you're not dropping Freeman.
But I think a lot of people are going to have that conundrum in the ESPN Standard League where Buxton is just not good enough. And I don't want to be the pessimist here. I've been the perennial Buxton optimist, but this first half, second half thing is an issue.
We drafted him way too generously. ESPN people did.
I will say this. Does the weather conditions with Minnesota concern you?
Everybody's playing in weather. I mean, I know you keep saying that.
They have extremes. Like... Minnesota has extremes like nowhere else. I mean, pretty much nowhere else in the country.
And yes, I
know that by June, the temperatures come up. I wonder whether that contributes.
Oh, I think Buxton will have a bunch better second half than first half. But I don't think Buxton is what we think he is. I don't think he's safe for 40 steals or 15 home runs or even 500 at-bats. And migraines are a problem. I mean, they got to figure out a way to make him better. I just think he was a sixth-round pick who probably should have been like a 10th-round pick. That's all.
And I could see it. It's a very fair case to make. Yeah, the migraines thing, by the way, Brandon Drury, I mean, we haven't heard updates.
It's a problem,
there.
Yeah. All right, briefly on Freddie Freeman, they say it's not a broken wrist. Another soft-tossing lefty hit him in the wrist last night. Last year was Aaron Loop, and he missed 6 weeks. Last night it was Hobie Milner, whose
almost
only job
identical.
Is to get lefties. Yeah, really very similar. They say it's okay. I doubt he plays in the next game or two, but hopefully this is not 6 weeks. And it was weird what happened. Did you see, like, he got hit and he just walked right off the field? He knew something was wrong right away. Lots of Braves news. I'm going to assume that Freddie Freeman's okay and plays this weekend, but obviously keep an eye on that. Don't drop him if he goes.
Watch, we'll get the X-ray results now. After we tape
or a torn ligament, which wouldn't show up on an X-ray. So you know, I think the MRI today is going to tell us more. I'm hoping. Look, I'm not a Braves fan. I'm a Phillies fan, but I like when the good players play.
Yeah.
I hate all these injuries. It depletes everything. It depletes our enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about fantasy. I mean, Rich Hill's back in the DL for whatever you want to call it. I mean, aren't you tired of this? I mean, like, this is why I don't invest in players like that.
He was mad about this. And I do then think that it's the Dodgers being conservative, so I don't want to panic yet. I think it's going to be two starts that he misses here. Is it recurring?
Briefly, over-under on plate appearances in the major leagues for Jose Bautista this season. I'll set it at... I don't think he makes it. Honestly,
give me an over-under.
I mean, I'll say 100. Because, I mean, the Braves are just doing some weird things here. The Acuna thing is just bothering me to no end. Yeah. If they're not going to call up Acuna, they're obviously not going to call up Austin Riley anytime soon, who's ready to play third base right now. They're playing Ryan Flaherty there, and they think he's hitting 365 legitimately. They really do.
Just get the way that this is going to be structured. Austin Riley's going to be the AA third baseman. Jose Bautista's going to be the AAA third baseman. Ryan Flaherty's going to be the major league third baseman. And Johan Camargo's going to be like, hey, look at me. Where can I play?
I think Camargo takes over Flaherty in a couple weeks. I think Camargo will be the most valuable Braves third baseman, but not all that valuable in like a Brock Holt kind of way, where he hits like 7 home runs and bats like 285, which is valuable in NL only and deep leagues. But I like Jose. I like Joey Bats on Twitter. You know, he had a nice career. He turned a nothing career into something amazing.
Does he follow you?
He does.
I'm amazed. You're a lucky guy.
No, I'm not.
I think he follows the waste paste.
I want
waste
to
paper
keep
basket
separately.
In the room.
What I'm trying to say is I don't think he's going to be much of a factor in the major leagues, and I have to say that based on everything I've learned over the years and what I think. Doesn't mean I don't like him. I hope he does well. I'm rooting for him. But come on, really?
It would be a very nice story if I could see him be marginally successful at third base in the majors.
He and Pujols were arguably the worst players in baseball last year, minus WAR, right?
Yeah. I like your first instinct on the over-under. I'm sorry. I'm under on 100. I like your first instinct.
They promote him in June. They give him 100 at-bats. He bats 210 with 4 home runs, and then they give up. That's probably what I think happens. It's not really fair for Camargo. Looking at the schedule now, because we should do that and look at the next couple of days, Eduardo Rodriguez, that Red Sox Angel. The Angels are ready for the Red Sox to leave. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Eduardo Rodriguez? There's a lot of people who think that this is a future star, you know, a top 50 starting pitcher statistically who can do some things. Certainly there's strikeout potential there. Your thoughts on Eduardo Rodriguez?
So let me do my best job here to completely curse him like I did Marco Gonzalez all those years ago because I absolutely love Eduardo Rodriguez.
He throws harder than Marco Gonzalez.
Well, you remember what I said, and I ruined Marco Gonzalez by saying, hey, I see him being a top 40 fantasy starting pitcher, and things didn't go well on the injury front for him. So fingers crossed here because Eduardo Rodriguez came into this year with injuries, which is the only reason his draft stock was deflated. It shouldn't have been. He had nothing but positive things said in spring training, and I love the command metrics, especially the underlying stats, suggest that there is stardom here. And I'll tell you this, Eric, I think it's in the top 25 tier. I think that's his potential level of stardom.
I agree. There's something here. And look, you want to talk about run support for guys like Matt Boyd? You know, the last time a guy had 3 starts of 6 innings or more, 1 earned run or less, and didn't win any of them to start a season? Great stat. I saw it on
Twitter. Let me see. Shelby Miller with the Braves that year.
It was Pedro in 94.
Wow.
That's a good
stat.
So Matt Boyd, I mean, obviously he's going to have a tough time winning double-digit games on that Tigers team. But Eduardo Rodriguez could have an ERA of 450 and win 15 games on this Red Sox team. I mean, I think Porcello's going to win 20 games.
I kind of want to shave a
he's
run
not
off
winning
your
20 games.
I'm just saying, Kyle.
Oh, wow.
Easy there. Your boy just walked another one. I mean, Chatwood walked 7 the other day.
I deserve it. I
can't believe I invested in Tyler Chatwood because of you. I'm kind of mad at you, actually.
I'm still not. It's April. You're telling people not to get mad. I'm not backing as much off of him. I will say that Porcello's looked good, and we knew coming into this year that he was somewhere between 2016 and 2017.
What if he's actually 2016?
He's not 2016. I'll put that on any kind of board bet you want. He's not 2016. He's off to a good start. He won 4 straight starts at one point last year.
I'll take your bet on 20 wins.
Can we get like Rick Porcello to give Kyle a new nickname if Rick Porcello does 2016
yes.
Rick Porcello things?
There we go.
Do we have connections there?
There we go.
I have.
I'll reach out.
I have Chatwood in our office league. It was an auction, and I'm like, why do I still even have him on the roster? There's better pitchers on free
Hashtag
agency.
Loyalty.
Yeah, and I'm starting to wonder why I'm loyal to you. It's Friday night, by the way. The pitching matchup of the year, Max Scherzer at Clayton Kershaw. Wow. Fantasy doesn't even matter. Just watch.
We backed into that
great.
Thanks to the injury. Yeah, it was great.
That's
love
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic.
Hate the injury. Love the matchup.
Other pitchers to watch here. Jeff Samardzija comes off the DL to face the Angels, the struggling Angels. Will Ohtani be in the lineup? I can't believe he will be.
I bet he will.
I mean, that's just
would you start Samardzija here? Legitimate question, because he did not look sharp in the rehab outing.
Yeah, I don't really care about his rehab outing. That's like spring training to me. And look how that did us on Ohtani. I think Samardzija is a – look, he's a 200-strikeout guy who gives up a lot of stuff. Okay.
So you're a yes.
I'm starting him right away.
I'm a no.
Unless they're telling us he's only going to have 60 pitches or something.
Yeah, that would be the qualifier here. But if he was given a full outing here, I'm still a no based on that and the history.
Here's an interesting matchup. Is there anything you can take from this? Because neither of these offenses are doing much of anything. Felix Hernandez versus Mike Minor. And I don't recommend either. But is there something here because neither offense can hit?
Neither offense can hit. It's not a high upside K one for Minor. I guess it is slightly more for Hernandez. It's
The fact that I'm even comparing these two tells you all you need to know about King Felix. He should not be rostered in a 10-team league.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even make the top 75 starter case for Felix. I think he's probably in the top 100. Mike Minor intrigues me, though, from the scouting and future potential angle, because so far so good with the way that his particular array of pitches is working out as a starter.
Sean Manaea versus Eduardo Rodriguez. Who do you think is more likely to end up the top 30 starting pitcher?
Rodriguez.
Really?
Yeah.
I like Manaea a lot. I disagree. I'm all over I'm in on Manaea. He's facing Chris Sale, supposedly, on Saturday night, but I'm using... Oh, against the Red Sox.
The only thing that differs between these two for me, and I'm with you, Eric, I do see Manaea's upside. It is pretty darn tremendous. Is I think there's a difference in the control between the two.
There is, but... And obviously this run support, but although Oakland scores, this is Sean Manaea to me is developing into like a 200 inning starting pitcher who strikes at 175 for like 5 years. I kind of view him as he's going to be a safe, kind of like, I see him as a 32 start guy moving forward to get strikeouts. I like him. I like Manaea. I liked him last year and he was kind of good. And then he was bad in the second half. What else do we have on Saturday here of note? James Paxton versus Bartolo Colon. You worried about Paxton still?
No, not really. I mean, obviously, I don't think he's going to give you a full slate of starts, but I think the ones that he does will be absolutely usable every time.
Worst run support is Lucas Giolito. He's facing Houston and Dallas Keuchel, so he may not get a whole lot on Saturday, but I think you got to keep Giolito on a roster, don't you? I still think there's a lot of strikeout upside here for this year.
Yeah, I would try my best to do it. One thing I will say is I am shifting my interest a little bit more towards his teammate Reynaldo Lopez, looking at the underlying stats. He's doing a better job of making some skills improvements. Giolito hasn't shown me it yet, but I'm with you, Eric. I think be patient with him.
Sunday Night Baseball is on ESPN. It is Jeremy Hellickson and Alex Wood. Hellickson's on the Nationals, by the way, in case you were wondering. His first start went Hellickson-like, nothing great. Watch anyway because it's on ESPN and A-Rod's really good. Joey Lucchese pitches on Sunday. He's the most added player in ESPN leagues. Everybody loves him. He's facing Patrick Corbin. That's a pretty good matchup there. I'll watch.
That could be a great pitcher's duel. Lucchese is doing an awful lot with that deception, and I think that it's too early for the scouts to have a book on him.
Any hitters you're watching for the rest of the week or in weekend? Any situations? Kyle, if you can... tempt your anger here. Anybody you're watching as well? Leo, what do you got? Any Rays here?
I did want to quickly mention a Ray. Blake Snell pitching on Saturday. He went through an outing without a walk last time out.
I wrote about that. You probably missed it, but yes.
you write?
Oh, man.
I left. Yeah, once in a while I do.
We're all troublemakers today.
You don't have to read it just because you're my boss. I have nothing to do with it.
No, but yeah, between Blake Snell and Lance McCullers basically pitching two outings with one walk between them and 20 strikeouts, like, they're both pitching this weekend. Reynaldo Lopez, who we just mentioned, facing McCullers on Sunday. Like, I'm obviously watching those because I love those dudes, but also because if they keep not walking people, they become really, really interesting really quick.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Absolutely, yeah.
Kyle, what you got? Anybody hitters you're watching this weekend?
I was going to go pitcher. I'm going to look at Fulton Evich. I've been impressed with what I've seen, at least 7 strikeouts in 3 or 4 outings. He gets the Mets on Sunday, so a little intrigued there. The Braves are better than we thought.
All right, so nobody can follow the rules. I asked for hitters.
Hitters are hard to do.
any hitters here you want to watch?
Watching the hitters that face Snell and McCullers.
All right, how about Aaron Hicks? Aaron Hicks is available in more than half of ESPN's leagues. He can hit. He can run. He's legit.
It's a good set of matchups, yeah.
I don't know where the weather's going to be like because that's all Tristan cares about, but yes.
The weather's going to be mentioned because I think it's having an influence. I do. There's okay, so two guys who are going a little bit deeper, and I like the way that they're being used high in the lineup. I will throw Adam Frazier. I think he's with the ballpark bump in Philadelphia. That's going to be a good opportunity as a leadoff man. And I also like, Eric, your guy, Franchy Cordero.
Oof, 0 for 5 with 4 Ks last night.
This is a must for this weekend for him to step up.
I think
up,
he's back in the minors when Margot comes off the DL next week, no matter what.
But I think it's something to watch because what they're doing with the first two spots in the lineup with Perella leading off, I'm kind of intrigued here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what the lineup looks like when Margot comes back because they might just dump him at eighth and leave Perella in the leadoff spot, you know, with Hosmer and Will Myers about to come off the DL. But I can't see how Franchi Cordero plays every day. I mean, who are they going to sit?
So, you know what else I've got my eye on, and I don't think he's going to play a lot. I'm looking at that Tyler O'Neill.
Yes, I was going to mention him because there's a lot of Twitter questions about Tyler O'Neill. The Cardinals called him
up. So why don't you save him for the hash brown segment?
Well, because okay, I have no idea if they're in the hash brown segment.
Why not bury the lead? We always do it.
All right, you know what? Speaking of, today's hash browns are brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Great talent. It's hard to find, and I know when I was a manager at ESPN, it was hard to find it. But I found Tristan. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you are looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter does not stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs, and right now, listeners to this fine show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel, because ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. So there might be a question about Tyler O'Neill and the hash browns. Is that what I'm being told? Because, you know,
it's a filthy rumor. Filthy.
I don't plan ahead at all.
No, you. I mean, you said you were getting all these questions on Twitter, and Andrew was one of them. He says, "What do I need to know about Tyler O'Neill? Does he hold 2018 value? And if not, what's his keeper potential looking forward?"
The problem here is pretty obvious, and we failed on Cody Bellinger last year. Okay, this is different. This is not the same thing. Unless Tommy Pham is hurt more than we think he is and heads to the disabled list today, which is certainly possible. I just don't see how O'Neill is any better than Ryan McMahon this weekend. And then he's back in the minors Sunday. They have Marcelo Ozuna in left, Dexter Fowler in right, Tommy Pham in center. So where does Tyler O'Neill play, Tristan?
Exactly. And I think they would have to get creative with bumping Fowler back to center field in order to clear a spot for him. But it's an opportunity for a guy who does have pretty immense raw power potential. I don't know, Eric, have you seen the St. Louis Post-Dispatch pictures of him? The monstrous biceps.
I've seen him play. I saw him play at the Futures game. He's built like a linebacker.
But people who want to see it, they have a picture on here where you can see just how monstrous these are. The issue I have with O'Neill, and Eric, you know I've been following him for a while back in the Mariners organization, is it's great power upside and it's a lot of swing and miss. The hit tool has some questions, and I think he's going to get a little exposed at the majors.
Yeah, I think this has to be because Tommy Pham is hurt, but I don't think it's that big a deal, right?
Mm-hmm. It could be. I mean, I worry is it's signaling the possibility it is more serious.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Pham heads to the DL today because otherwise I can't explain the move. None of these guys are moving to first base, and even if they were, Jose Martinez is in the way. The fact that O'Neill can you know, bench press a house is irrelevant if he can't catch, if he can't identify pitches, if he can't walk a bit and hit 270. I have concerns he would hit 270 with regular playing time. But so and people were on Twitter saying I'm dropping like Ryan Zimmerman and Carlos Santana to pick him up. You know, I think that's a mistake, but it's your team.
I'm with you on Santana, by the way, the league adjustment. I think that is something.
Would you rather have Santana or Zimmerman the rest of the year, by the way?
Santana.
I mean, Zimmerman homered twice yesterday and tripled, didn't he?
He did, but I don't hesitate to say Santana there. I don't think they're really in the same tier.
Oh, I think they're kind of in the same tier. I mean, Santana's not hitting 35 home runs. He's probably hitting 24 home runs. And because he bats second, he's probably not knocking in 80. The over on 24 for Santana?
I mean, I love the park for him. Love it. I'm very big on that park being an underrated power venue.
All right. I mean, that's fine. I mean, Santana hit 23 last year in 154 games. So I don't know why we would expect a lot of power.
I think it's a much better power park for him than Cleveland was.
All right, what else we got, Kyle?
Alrighty, Juan wants to know, how real is this version of Javier Baez? Could he be Brian Dozier in the making? Dozier didn't come along until he was a little older.
The problem there is the walks. I mean, Dozier takes a walk, Baez does not. The power comp, it wouldn't shock me if 1 year Bias hit 40 home runs. Would it for you?
Oh, absolutely not. I think that's been his ceiling all along. I mean, I think there's a good likelihood that somewhere in his career, at his peak, he is going to hit 40 homers. And it might happen a couple of times, but the batting average is never going to be good. And somebody did point this out to me afterwards on Twitter, the walk thing where his walk rate is up. Yeah, 4 of the 6 walks have been intentional walks.
Right, so. And that's misleading. I'm looking at his game by game. He's walked once in the last week. A lot of intentionals because he was batting eighth, I guess, or whatever they were doing in the lineup. I mean, Baez should be rostered in every ESPN league. Every league, really. I mean, he had 23 homers and 10 steals last year, but wasn't he like the number 20 middle infielder? I wrote about it recently.
Something like that, yeah.
He's not going to win a batting title. He's not going to score a ton of runs. Could he have 30 home runs this year? Yeah, 30 home runs I could see, but I'll still take the under.
The positives he has is it is a significant rise in his hard contact rate, and if you dig into the StatCast numbers, he does look like one of these guys elevating the launch angle. So there's reason for promise, but it's all home runs.
All right, well, we like home runs. What else we got?
Fantasy analysts dig the home run, I'm told. Nicholas, has Teoscar Hernandez, he notices that he was hyped by Keith Law this offseason, and he's been impressive with 8 hits in his 4 games in the big leagues. Is there 2018 value to be had here?
Well, if Law says it, it must be true. I mean, we all think something of Teoscar Hernandez. Didn't he hit like 7 homers last September or something like that?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we know he's got power. I don't think he has any plate discipline. We were worried about the opportunity, but the opportunity came right away. I don't know why they would demote him anytime soon, but I mean, if you look at his 421 batting average, I mean, come on. He's probably more likely to hit like 240. But is there power there? Would it shock anybody if Teoscar Hernandez had 25 home runs in the majors this year? No, I don't think it would. Would it for you?
It wouldn't shock me because it meant something happened to clear a spot for him. I think, and Eric, this was your guy more than mine. You pointed out that this could have been one of the great sleepers if they don't make trades for Randall Grichuk and sign Curtis Granderson and they just give Hernandez everyday at-bats. 8 homers, 341 isolated power in that month. I mean, that's insane.
And the only reason he's playing is because Kendrys Morales is on the disabled list, and sure, he won't be starting tomorrow, I think. Isn't Morales coming back tomorrow?
I believe it's within the next few days. Yeah,
right. And they're not going to. I mean, Kevin Pillar is an amazing center fielder, so he's going to play.
Right.
And they traded for Randall Grichuk to play right field. And Granderson and Steve Pearce is actually a really good platoon in left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but Teoscar Hernandez is probably back in AAA tomorrow.
I think he's a very good player who doesn't have any superstar skill. And it's a good ballpark for him. But, Eric, you're right. I mean, it's about the playing time.
Yeah, sorry. I think by the time our next show is, he's probably back in Buffalo. I don't know if it's snowing there.
Not that there's anything wrong with the Buffalo area. Come on now.
No, it's just, you know.
I hear they have good wings.
Wings, the garbage plates in that general area. We do it okay in upstate New York.
You're the guy who showed me what a garbage plate was. I'd never heard of that until a year ago.
Not a very appealing name, but you know, it's a staple.
I've seen a lot of garbage plate appearances this week.
Sure, that wasn't a subtle shot, was it?
All right,
CJ. CJ's got Moncada or Gallo in an OBP league. Keeper league, you notice that contact's spotty for both, but both have tremendous upside when they do hit the ball.
I mean, if on-base percentage is a category, don't you have to take Gallo? I mean,
yeah,
that's a guy who could hit 40 homers every year with a 360 on base, even if he bats 230. But Moncada can take a walk, too. I keep telling people this. I mean, he has the ability to spot the right pitches and take a walk if he wants. He's just not doing it. Maybe it's the weather. Give me what you think Moncada's ceiling is for home runs and stolen bases.
His ceiling for this year is a number that low number beginning with 2, and that's probably for both categories. I'm a little bit more optimistic about the steals than I am the homers.
So a 2020 player.
That's the ceiling.
All right.
I think, and we'll put it this way, Gallo's certainty of hitting the ceiling is much greater than Moncada's.
I'll agree with that.
And I have Gallo in a keeper league like this where I had people chasing me down to try and trade for him during the offseason, and I have him to spare, and the offers weren't good enough. And the reason for this is that addition of on-base percentage eliminates all the downside. He's what, 320 for on-base? I mean, that's like a fair mid-range baseline, wouldn't you say?
I mean, yeah, so was Jimmy Rollins for years. I'm not using that as a comp. I'm just saying, like, he's going to be more valuable in fantasy than in real life. Moncada.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
All right, I mean, and again, like, Jimmy Rollins led off for a decade, and how many times did he have an on-base over 330? I don't know if you can use that as an example, but he's a switch hitter with power. Maybe Rollins is my comp. A switch hitter with power and speed, but strikes out a lot.
Moncada is younger of the two, so you could get more years out of him. I feel like Gallo gets.
I could do a better job on the comp there, but it makes sense to me. He's going to lead off because he's fast, and the manager just wants a fast guy. But I mean, in terms of on base percentage, I mean, he's not Billy Hamilton, but I mean, Joey Gallo is the pick here. That's the answer.
He's one of the few guys in baseball I think you're going to write down for 40 homers annually as the projection. Every year, regardless of the baseball.
Yeah, sure.
All right, we'll get out of here with one more coming from Matt. He wants to know if Domingo Santana is still worth the roster spot. He's rostered in almost 75% of leagues, but he's done next to nothing thus far.
I got asked about this yesterday.
It's April 19th. Are we just going to forget everything Domingo Santana did last year? It was all legit, too. This was not BABIP. This was not fluky. You know, the 278 batting average was legit. He struck out, but he walked. We always knew he had power. Maybe he doesn't steal a ton of bases. He hasn't even attempted one. But look, if you want to drop Domingo Santana on April 19th, go ahead. I think you're going to be picking him up on May 19th. I think there's a good player here. And for whatever reason, he's just not off to a very good start. He had a month last year like this where he didn't do much. It wasn't the first month, but he's not going to keep hitting 105 against left-handed pitching. He's a right-handed batter. I mean, he's just off to a bad start. Who are you dropping him for? If you're dropping him for Ryan Flaherty, you're being ridiculous. If you're dropping him for, who's been the most? Jed Lowry, I guess. I mean, Lowry's not going to do this for 6 months, but.
You'll be rolling over that spot if you do the Lowry move.
I agree. I mean, I just don't think it makes sense. But, he's not hitting. If you're dropping him for Aaron Hicks, okay. If you're dropping him for Hanley Ramirez, okay. Kingery, okay. Gurriel, okay. But, I don't think you should be dropping these guys. I mean, I'm looking at the most drop list for hitters. I mean, there's a bunch of injury guys. But, I mean, Avisail Garcia of the White Sox. All right, I guess I would cut him. I would definitely before Santana. All these first basemen, Zimmerman, Lomo, Marcin, Alonso, Santana, Chris Davis, the bad one, the Orioles. I think it's too soon. But you're not my team.
So when I looked at this yesterday, the three things that stood out that bother me about Santana is that chase rate up 5%, ground ball rate up 10%, hard contact rate is down 8%.
Why are you even looking at those numbers?
Because we just said they're important.
Domingo Santana's numbers in 18 games.
Let me finish. The three of those things are concerns, and I've got the eyebrow raised, and I'm going to watch them. However, it is still an 18-game sample, and the guy has not had a consistent role day in and day out, and I do think that is contributing here. The only reason I'm a slight pessimist about Santana is I was in the first place. At the beginning of the offseason, I said he couldn't sustain the homer to fly ball rate. He was second in baseball.
I mean, Eric Thames is homering every day now, so if he keeps hitting, Ryan Braun will play left field. Yelich is off the DL.
Yep.
Yelich could come off the DL this weekend, right?
I have a bigger issue.
Yelich is already off. Yeah.
And I have a bigger issue with that when it comes to Santana than Santana's own performance, in spite of the three numbers I threw.
Okay. If they're going to secret Domingo Santana because he's... All right.
They should have traded him if they were going to do this. I'm sorry. They should have.
All right. Yeah. Seems ridiculous to me. Any other thoughts here as we wind down?
If you were going to pivot to that two Thames, over under the 31 homers he hit last year.
Thames?
Yeah.
Over. I think Thames could hit as many homers as he wants, frankly, if they just play him. I mean, obviously he had the great first month, and then after that he didn't. But he knows what a strike and a ball is. That's important. And Ryan Braun has to be whining about playing first base. I'm almost positive, without knowing, that he doesn't want to play first base.
I've noticed that in some situations where they were previously using him at first, they're using him in left field. So
trade Domingo Santana to the Rays. They desperately need an outfielder. I mean,
please.
Right?
I don't want to see Johnny Field no disrespect to Johnny Field, but
you kinda
come on.
Disrespected him.
No, like your plan coming into the season as the Rays is not to start Johnny Field in the outfield regularly. Like,
well, of course not. But they had other options. I mean, they had the best defensive center fielder. Carlos Gomez was cheap. Malik Smith should lead off.
Right. And they got rid of Corey Dickerson for nothing. And even though he's not a great outfielder, quote unquote, he's still a productive hitter and should have been there. But, you know.
Leo, I have the solution for you.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get Hat Guy to play the outfield for you.
I mean,
that was a nice
glove.
Catch by him. I mean, yeah, granted, he brought the glove down after, but, you know.
Right, he's not a good framer. We don't want him at catcher, but we want him in the outfield.
Yeah, we can get by with the outfield there. I bet he's got some pop in that bat, too, you know.
All right, that's it. Goodbye. Thank you so much for listening to our show. We will be back on Monday, I presume, and the same gang will be here, Tristan and Leo and Kyle and Anthony. And we all have lots of fun. It's two times a week for the rest of the season, and so keep on listening and enjoy your baseball. The weather will get better and less players will get hurt, and cookies are terrific. Have an awesome weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Warm up.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.